Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to day 8, I believe it is, of Tennis Unfiltered at the Australian Open 2024. I had to think about day 8 because it's Sunday, which means it should be day 7, Calvin. But of course it's not. And it is your last day in Melbourne. Just give me your overall impressions of the tournament. I know you weren't necessarily sure about it to begin with, but feel like it's grown on you pretty significantly.
I've enjoyed it. It's been a nice tournament. You know, it's a really nice, there's plenty of space. The site is really nice. Still probably second in my charts of Grand Slams behind US Open. I think it's better than both French and Wimbledon for me. And I was talking with Henry about it last night, and we agreed that the reason the US Open, and I think most people tend now to agree, it's these two. That's the way it is at the minute. And I think the main reason is that the other two are just up their own asses a little bit, the French and Wimbledon. Whereas these two tournaments feel like it's really for the fans. Obviously, it's for money more than anything for both of them, but they do make an effort for the fans to enjoy it a little bit more, I think, than either the French or Wimbledon, who it feels like they think it's your privilege to be there.
I think also, this is known as the Happy Slam for a reason, and they do prioritise, first of all, players, and you've obviously had the player side experience, and you know they've always been known as a tournament that looks after players pretty well, and I think probably you would say that's true for the most part.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, scheduling aside, I agree. You know they're excellent with the players and that kind of thing. To be fair, all the French Wimbledon and US Open are pretty good for the players. Well, the French less so. I think, and as well, you know, you can't doubt the crowds. The crowds have been excellent. That every court is busy.
Yeah.
Like, even if there's no one who you'd think... There are matches at Wimbledon and certainly the French where if there isn't really an interest in it, you can imagine there being some, you know, a lot of empty seats. Mm. Whereas here, I've seen very few. Like, in our doubles the other day by... maybe 20 minutes into it, even when it was... The first doubles was the stand was full because they played against two Aussies, but the second match was two Brits, a Portuguese and a Mexican, and again, the stand on that court was probably 90% full.
Hmm. But on the flip side, you know, there have been and there regularly are 80, 90,000 people through the gates every day in Melbourne Park, but that has disadvantages with it. And, you know, we were talking about this today and people will have their own experiences of going to these tournaments. You come on a middle weekend, there's not a lot of tennis to watch.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, I woke up this morning and I thought, what am I going to do? I thought, I'll come down and watch the tennis. And then when I put the order of play on, I looked who was playing at the time and I think there was only three senior matches being played.
Mm.
That includes men's singles, men's doubles, women's doubles. And then it went up and down between two and five, I think, for the rest of the day at any one time. But five was a rarity. I think there was five matches on at one time. But other than that, there's not a lot unless you want to watch the juniors. And I feel that's like, you know, being that we're only just halfway through the tournament, you know, it's, I'm not sure about that again. Although the people seem pretty happy. And the flip side of that, again, is that they have four stadium courts here, I think.
Yep.
Four or five. And it means that they can get big matches on all of those and instead of the outside courts, which I guess is a good thing because it means you're playing into big crowds in the second week of a slam. Every match is
playing
to big crowds.
And I think what's important to recognise is that only Rod Laver and Margaret Court are ticketed courts.
Yeah.
All the other stadiums, so John Cain, Kia, 1573, where we watch.
I think on John Cain now you have to pre-book tickets, though.
Well, they've got a weird virtual queuing
system.
Yeah,
that's
what I
heard.
But the majority of the stadium is general admission.
Right, okay, okay.
It always used to be where Kyrgios used to play before Kyrgios actually became a serious tennis player for about 10 minutes. And he would always play on John Cain. It was always quite rowdy, especially late at night.
Yeah.
I suppose that the one thing I would say in terms of, you know, the only stuff going on outside of the stadium courts being juniors and doubles and, you know, mixed or legends or whatever is ground passes are $60 today. It's about just over 30 quid.
Yeah.
I think most people will be quite happy to pay 30 quid for a whole day, watch a bit of junior. I mean, to be honest, you know, watching juniors, it can be a pretty high standard.
Yeah, 30 quid's very good for this stage in the tournament, I think. And you, like you say, you could get on John Cain. The thing about John Cain, what I found weird, I've been on there, went on right at the start of the tournament when it was empty, and then I went on there today to watch a bit of doubles. And it's a huge structure for relatively few seats in there. There's a lot of empty space in there, isn't there? Like when
you're a long way from the court.
Yeah, and like there's no corners on it. It's just four stands round a court. I don't know whether they built the stadium around, or the arena around an already existing court or not, but
I mean, I think what you have to remember about, and I actually didn't really realise this until I got chatting to one of the TA people the other day, is that Melbourne Park is a very busy place, and only 3 weeks of the year is it a tennis venue.
Well, yeah,
they play basketball here. They've
had
the World Swimming Championships on Rod Laver.
Okay.
You know, they have loads of gigs at John Cain, which is why it's the shape and size that
it is.
Right.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's a pretty versatile place.
Oh, I didn't realise that. Yeah. It's funny because we were only saying the other day, we were sat around saying, you know, the site is a beautiful site, and we were like, it's a lot of money for 3 weeks of the year.
Well,
but
there you go.
But I guess they do make a lot of money in those 3 weeks. That probably covers it, you know.
But, you know, I think it's pretty unique among the slams in that it does makes it work for the rest of the year in terms of stuff that they do. Let's talk a bit more about the actual tennis that we've seen today. Novak Djokovic very nearly completed a triple bagel. He won 14 games in a row. 13, I think, against Adrian Mannarino before he won the 14th. He looked thoroughly delighted to have won that. I mean, it kind of comes on something we mentioned the other day, Calvin. The French crowd have been a real feature of this tournament, and they were in Mannarino against Djokovic. Djokovic was getting wound up about it, I think probably because he needed something to keep him going, because Adrian Mannarino certainly wasn't. I don't know, maybe the French crowd like that all over the world. I mean, France obviously is a big tennis-watching country.
I've not seen many anywhere else, but although I actually heard somebody on a football podcast I listened to earlier on today making a good point that there are so many foreigners in Australia that you do get a lot of different nationalities at these type of things. Like, we were on the court earlier on in the tournament, we watched Jason Kubler against Dominic Galan, and I think it was probably 50-50 between Aussies and Colombians on that court. It was a real, real...
Because every Colombian in Melbourne turned up.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then there's so many Italians here. Mm. Like, at the start of the week, where the Italians were going nuts. I think we watched Caboli, didn't we? And they were going nuts at that. I mean,
but they're also very vocal, right?
Yeah. And then even Nuno last night, when I watched Nuno Borges, like, there's a fair few Portuguese in the crowd there. There's one guy who was going absolutely nuts near his towel. And I spoke with Nuno today and I said, do you know who he is? And he says, he's at all the tournaments and I've no idea who he is. He said he always stands, and Nuno's girlfriend was telling me that this guy's been following him for I think he's been on the tour for about 5 years now. And he said when he always brings his daughter, and when his daughter at the start, then they had this little baby next to him, and he said now the daughter's about 8, and like now she's just like looks embarrassed that her dad just going nuts every time Nuno Borges wins a point. And she said last night there's a TV clip of the daughter telling her dad to calm down. I think that's what brings a really good atmosphere to this tournament that you maybe don't get at the French. I don't think it's very much French and apathy for anyone else, isn't it? Whereas, like Wimbledon, You don't, because I mean, London is a very multicultural city, but I'm not sure that really reflects in the Wimbledon crowd.
No, no, it's true.
And New York, again, similar. It's a very pro-American crowd,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes, as I wrote in my piece from the Djokovic match today, he gave them plenty of opportunities to engage in the French national pastime, booing. It really is remarkable how often French.
Although, so, I didn't see any of it, but somebody said he had a go at the crowd again today, didn't he?
Yeah, but like I said, I think he was just trying to fire himself up. And you know, there was a group of 20 odd lads in vintage French football shirts, which are obviously great,
right.
And rubber bald caps.
Right, okay.
Which, honestly, it was like a Calvin Beton party, to be quite honest.
Definitely not Zinedine Zidane, definitely Calvin Beton.
For the record, I've never seen you and Adrian Mannarino in the same room.
Somebody said to me last week, who was it? It was when I was in Thailand. Somebody said I looked like Vin Diesel, and then somebody said,
generous.
Then an American guy came up to me and he said something like, "Oh, well done in a United Cup last week, man." And I was like, I don't know if it was United Cup or it was something. I was like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Oh, you didn't get my joke, like my Mannarino joke." And I was like, "Yes, we all look the same."
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, he also has sort of fashionable beard and fashionable baldness.
Well, fashionable might not be relevant for me, but, but at least as look. At least he's not a bald denier, and that's what we frown upon in the community.
Yes.
And let me tell you, there are a couple of players at this tournament who are.
Yeah, the bald deniers are well known.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I mean Rafa Nadal pulled out, and he's the sort of leader. He's of the
I mean that there's stages of bald denying though. There's like Nadal's the lowest stage because he just doesn't seem to have realised he's bald.
Right.
The worst, the ones that we frown upon the most are the ones who know they're bald and they try and fix it.
Right?
You should just end with either the tattoos or the hair transplants.
I see. Well, the next big meeting, you can take notes on who's on the list and who's on the naughty list. Now, Novak Djokovic into his 58th Grand Slam quarterfinal, equaling Roger Federer's record. Incredibly, he's reached the quarterfinal at 58 out of his 73 Grand Slam tournaments, which is, I mean, as far as a hit rate goes, that is...
I mean, it's still some way off the best, isn't it, which is Chris Evert. And you can check it now, James, while we're here. I think in Chris Evert's whole career, she only didn't make the semis four times. I didn't realise just... I mean, she's a little bit before my time, but I didn't realise just how good she was.
I'm making a face, because... two, three, four... It's four times she didn't make the semi-final. Two of those times she made the quarter-final.
Yeah, that's astounding. What's the years on that? It's something like early...
So 71 through 89.
That's astonishing.
I mean, right. I mean, okay, so she didn't play the Australian a lot.
Yeah.
And she missed a few French, but that's still a hell of a lot of tournaments.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And that's
still
56.
I think what impressed me most about that record, what she had, is that the career went that long, so she was very young at the start and quite old later on. So yeah, just astonishing stuff.
Yeah, remarkable. I think Chris Evert is one of those people who gets kind of forgotten.
I guess she kind of kept herself to, you know, it was, although she was, having said that, she was a total superstar in her prime. She was married to Jimmy Connors and obviously John Lloyd as well, wasn't
I'd quite forgotten she was married to John Lloyd. But yeah, I feel like whenever we talk about the greats of the game, you know, in the women's game, we talk about Billie Jean King, I'm not thinking about Lova, and somehow Evert's name never quite comes into it.
Absolutely.
But absolutely should. Anyway, we've got distracted from Novak Djokovic, who's going to face Taylor Fritz in the quarterfinal. He beat Stefanos Tsitsipas in four sets. Stefanos Tsitsipas is going to drop at least a 10th in the world as a result of this tournament. Fritz and Hurkacz both overtaking him. If Dumanur wins tonight, which it looks like he's not going to, but it's possible... then he may overtake him as well. He's a set down 2-1 in the second as we speak. I mean, Stefanos Tsitsipas is since reaching the Australian Open final, he's not had a great 12 months.
That was a bit out of the blue, even when he reached the final, wasn't it? Last year, it wasn't like anyone thought it was going to happen that he was on great form. But I think this is probably about right. He's not been better than the 10th best player in the world for some time. I mean, I still think he's a little bit overranked on form at that.
I suppose. He's got an advantage in that he's a bit of an all-court player. Like, he plays well on clay, plays well on the slow hard court and fast hard court, so it keeps him relatively high. But I don't know what he needs to do to make a jump to the next level, because he will certainly not think that losing to Taylor Fritz in the fourth round of a Grand Slam is his level.
No, I mean what he needs to do is get an actual tennis coach. That, I keep saying that, but that would actually help him. And I mean, it just doesn't... I don't want to sound like, you know... like Roy Keane here and that kind of thing, but I've been around the tournament. It just seems a little, he seems like he's a little bit comfortable with not being that successful when he's here. He seems to be, and look, for quality of life and that kind of thing, he seems really happy traveling the world with his girlfriend and his brother and his dad and a couple of mates who seem to be some sort of fitness coaches or that kind of thing.
Sure.
But, you know, and you might go, why not? You know, he's young, like, why not enjoy yourself like that? He's happy. He seems happy with the rest of his life. But if we're talking strictly about the tennis, I'm not sure that is entirely conducive to doing that. Like, you know, one of the things is he plays doubles every week with his brother. And I don't see how you can be successful at singles if you're playing doubles every week.
Especially, not that they don't take it seriously, but, you know, he's not playing with his brother because that's the best possible doubles partner he can have. Like, it's not an entirely serious endeavour.
Yeah.
I do take your point there. But anyway, it means that Taylor Fritz is into the Australian Open quarterfinal. His consistency at Grand Slams goes on. He's got a terrible head-to-head record with Novak Djokovic, having lost all eight of their meetings. He's won two sets against him. They both came in here, actually, in a five-setter when Novak had an abdominal problem. Do you give Taylor Fritz any... Has he got something different for him this time?
I don't think so, no. I think the best chance he had was 2 years ago when he played
him here? 3 years ago.
3 years ago, wow. 3 years ago when he played him here when Djokovic had, I don't know, was that the year when he had the seven-metre tear in his ab that somehow he managed to come through?
Exactly. I'm going to read you some quotes from Nick Kyrgios, Calvin, which you're going to love. He says, me and Taylor are really good mates. I try and help him out as much as I can. We go back and forth on messages and a lot on Instagram. I tell him to come forward because his ground strokes are so big. He needs to be able to come forward and put those volleys away. He's really struggled against that matchup against Novak in the past because he isn't that comfortable moving forward. Do you think that's valid tactical advice?
No, because he can't volley. He's just not very good at volleying. It's all right saying come forward, but Taylor Fritz... I mean, I was talking with a few players the other day and we were talking about the worst volleyers in the top 200. And obviously everybody knows who my shout is.
Yeah.
And Taylor Fritz was one of the names that the players all mentioned as the worst volleyers in the top 200.
On that, I mean, I was listening to some commentary the other day and a good point made by, I think it was Laura Robson in the end, said that when Sabalenka won a load of doubles titles, she actually didn't, you know, people always say, if you want to get better at volleying, do doubles. And actually, when she played doubles, she didn't do a lot of volleying. Yeah. At least Mertens was very active at the net, and Sabalenka won on serve and return. Is it as simple as for someone like Taylor Fritz, go and play a bit of doubles?
I don't necessarily think so, no. Not anymore, because, I mean, for one, like now, 55% of the men's top 100 doubles that serve and stay back. And also, it's different type of volleying. Like, we're now at the stage, like, now we work on a different type of technique for doubles volleying than you do for singles volleying, because it's a different type of thing. Now, what it would improve is, like, feel around the net, like, just hands and that kind of thing.
Mm.
But it's totally different. You're not approaching the net with a ground stroke so much, and the footwork pattern is different, and you'd play different volleys in doubles than you would in singles. So, like I say, yeah, it would work on improve your feel, but what you're actually probably better off doing is getting a coach who knows how to teach a volley, which there are there are a lot of them around. There aren't many of them around on the men's professional tennis circuit, or the women's, to be fair, because the teaching of volleys that I see around these tournaments is terrible.
I've had a question from a listener sitting in my inbox for a while that I'm going to finally get into the Open that I know I've sent to you earlier, Calvin, and you're going to go and spend some time watching Alex Dimeno later, so perhaps your opinion will change on this. But Caitlin on email says, hi guys, I've been listening to you for almost a year and I love your tennis analysis and discussions. However, I just had one thing I wanted your opinion on. As an Australian, I'm a diehard Alex Dimeno fan. As such, my family and I were over the moon with his United Cup run, particularly when he beat Alexander Zverev to crack the top 10. I know Calvin doesn't have the highest opinion of his tennis, but I wanted to hear you guys talk some more about his achievement, how he did it, and what has led to his becoming world number 10. I love the podcast so much. Thank you for what you're doing. Can't wait to hear your AO pods. Well, I hope you're enjoying them, Caitlin. Calvin, how is Alex Dimeno going to the world's top 10?
I mean, it's a bit harsh. I don't have the highest opinion of his tennis. I mean, I don't know if it's harsh. I don't really, but... no, I think what he's achieved is excellent with what he's got. I just don't think he's got a great deal. What I will say is I think he is the fastest player that's ever played the game. I think around a tennis court, I don't think I've ever seen anybody faster. And I include in that like Michael Chang and all those guys who were rapid round the court. But I don't think I've ever seen anyone quicker than Alex de Minaur, which is, you know, that is his biggest strength. And also, he competes very well and he doesn't miss a whole lot of balls. So that, if you combine all those type of things together, you have to be a very, very good player to beat him. Now, his problem comes in that he really struggles to hit through players, and when he needs to attack a bit more, when he needs to do more than just not make balls, and the other guys can hit through him and get through him that way. He does have, he has a unique forehand. He hits it very flat with a bit of a strange grip. Now, certain players can exploit that. If a player has a good slice, they can exploit it because he can't really do anything. He has to hit it upwards, and he doesn't hit with much topspin. So when you look at the guys who he plays with really good slices, like, I know he has a terrible record against Dan Evans, who's going to keep making him hit short slices all the time, and I think that's where he struggles. But you've got to give him credit. He's certainly... I think he'll hang around for a bit longer. I do think he's on the minute. I think he's on a particularly good bit of form, rather than he's gone up a level with his tennis. I think he's probably somewhere between, I'd say some in actual terms, I'd say somewhere between the 25th and the 15th best player in the world.
If you're looking at areas of game that you would like to improve, or if you've got the job and they said, well, what are we really going to work on? What do you think?
I think it's one of those. I don't know. There's much you can improve with him. I think he's currently just. I think he really is maxing what he's got, and it's one of those. It seems a bit silly, but you've just got to kind of hope the draws open up, and not open up, but he gets the type of opponent who he likes to play, and he avoids the ones who he doesn't in the biggest tournaments. So. It's not something that I would think. I'm sure that, you know, I, as a coach, I'll always say this to all the players that ever approach me, and I've turned players down and that kind of thing. If I don't see something that I can improve, I won't coach them. And with Alex de Minaur, it would be along those lines, I think.
That's why you turned down that Federer job so many times.
That's
right?
The one, yes.
Right, a couple more things I want to look at. Just three round four matches tomorrow that I think are worth our time. Norrie versus Zverev, and we kind of touched on this the other day, but have you had any more thoughts, any more chances for Cam Norrie to unpick Alexander Zverev?
I don't, but then again, I didn't think he'd beat Casper Ruud. although, saying that, you put me off that, actually, James, because I thought that like he actually matched up well to Ruud, and then you said, nah, Ruud always batters him. So I thought he also would struggle against Zepieri, which he did, to be fair, but he came through that. So.
And actually, for the purposes of the tape, you did say off-podcast that you thought Cam's forehand to Casper's crap backhand.
Yeah.
Sort of words to those.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And that is exactly how it played out.
Yeah. I think the opposite with Zverev, that's the problem, I think, that he's his best... It's not really a... It is a weapon, but it's... Because it's hard to say a weapon when it's not hit that hard, really. Is right into Zverev's wheelhouse.
Yeah.
If it was the other way round, if he had like a heavy forehand into Zverev's forehand, I'd be like, okay, this could be interesting. But unfortunately, Zverev's playing very well.
Yeah. Hurkacz versus Arthur Cazaux. Now, Cazaux, you kind of mentioned Cazaux the other day. His serving stats are quite remarkable. I heard Matt on the tennis podcast the other day say he's maximising his serve pretty impressively. Does feel that way. I mean, does that feel like there's a mean reversion due? It can't continue.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think he's a very good player, Arthur Cazaux, but I don't think he's the second best server left in the tournament, which is what the stats suggest, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Rublev being the most effective.
I don't think Rublev's the best server in the tournament either.
But so you think Hurkacz just has too much for him?
I think so, yeah. Although Hurkacz does have these strange results at times where, you know, you think he's ready to make the move and it just doesn't happen for him. But I don't... I'd say something I was surprised that was with Hurkacz was that I saw earlier that he's at career high now, number 9. I was surprised he'd not been higher than that.
I am also surprised at that. He's 8th in the race as well. I mean... Yeah. I suppose, like...
I thought he'd been, like, 5 or 6, so, you know, he won Miami or that, didn't he? But surprised he'd never been higher than 9.
I suppose he's never really had massive results at Grand Slams. He got to Wimbledon semi-final once.
It was more not on his results. It's more he just. Whenever I looked at the rankings, he seems to have been there. Maybe he's been nine or maybe he's been nine quite a
lot.
Bit.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Yeah.
And then finally, how many games do you give Mihomir Kecmanovic against Alcaraz?
I don't think it'd be a complete duffing because like Kecmanovic battles well. Mm. I think Alcaraz will beat him, but I can see that being a 3-3 and 4, maybe something like that.
Mm. Which, I mean, on paper, that is a duffing, right?
No, we say that a two. I know that the UTR system, which is the rating system, they say a competitive tennis match, and this is best of three.
Yeah.
They say competitive tennis match is when the loser wins seven games. So
3 and 4.
So 3 and 4. So 3, 3 and 4 would be just about that.
Yeah. Hanging on.
Yeah, I would say that because that could be one break in each set. I think that's competitive.
Yeah, fine. Well, Kevin, it's been a pleasure doing some actual in-person podcasts with you all the way around the world. It's been great not to have talked to George for a whole week. I will get him back on later as we get closer to... Oh, and you've got a lanyard story that I was supposed to ask you about.
I do. And this is, I wanted to tell this on the podcast. I was amazed at this. So, and people might be interested or might not. So, when I came on the grounds today, so for anyone who doesn't know, like when the coaches here, we get a lanyard that allows you into certain areas. It has like which areas you're allowed in, and you can go in any of the entrances or out there, any of the exits, that kind of thing. Now, it's supposed to, in theory, go around your neck, but no one ever wears it around their neck. Although you do, you have
yours. Yes, I do, because otherwise I will lose it.
Well, yeah, I lose everything except for my lanyard, really. Although I did lose my US Open one. which was
there's a lesson here,
which was
Calvin.
The last slam. So, so anyway, today I went for a walk down the river, and I came. And this is one of the gripes I have with the Australian Open that's come on the last day. So yesterday, today I went for a walk down the river, River Yarra, and then walked back. And you can come in through the first entrance is the fan entrance, which is about a 15-minute walk then to the ground. They search your bag and scan your tickets.
Oh, over by the city.
Yeah.
You come over the big
bridge. You come in there. So I've come in with my small bag. I just had a small bag today with my water bottle and a bit of sun cream in there. And my lanyard was in there. So I come in and they scan it. They search my bag, scan my lanyard. And the security guard comes up to me and goes, you need to put your lanyard around your neck. And I was sort of like, I thought he was a bit aggressive. I was like, yeah, I will do. When I get in, and he goes, you need to put it on now. And I said, and then like, I mean, I'm not going to do, he was very aggressive. So I said, I will do when I get in. So I started walking, right. And the security guard then proceeds to follow. I didn't realize he was following me, but then there's a big sort of sculpture that says, welcome to Melbourne. So I thought I'll get a picture of that. So this was about 3 minutes into the walk. So I turned around to put a picture in it, and he puts his hand in front of my phone. And he goes, you need to put the lanyard around your neck immediately. And I said, wait a minute. Right. I'm not trying to get in anywhere.
Yeah, you're in a public area.
Yeah, I said, I'm not trying to get in anywhere. If I had come in here with a ticket on my phone, you wouldn't make me walk around displaying my ticket all the time. I said, I'm not trying to get in anywhere. He said, you need to put your lanyard on immediately. I was like, I'll put it on when I get where I'm trying to get in somewhere. So then he gets on his radio, and there starts radio in Security Central. And there's a gentleman called Calvin Betton who refuses to put his lanyard on. Right, and then I shook my head and started walking, and I noticed he followed me the full 15-minute walk into the ground, and he followed me. We're sat in Rod Laver now. He followed me into Rod Laver, and then we were met by the head of security there. And I said to him, and he said, the head of security was a reasonable man. He said, what's the problem? I said, right, my question is to you this, right, why do you have security guards? And he goes, well, you know, it's quite obvious. And I said, right, because this gentleman has left his post and followed me for 15 minutes, and I can't really understand what the worst case scenario would be if I didn't put my lanyard on. And he's like, yeah, and I kind of know, and I know what you're saying, but it's a rule that everyone has to wear them around the neck, so you are going to have to put it around your neck. And I said to him, I was like, right, I'm going to go to the players' restaurant where you need your lanyard to get in. If more than 1% of the people in there have got their lanyards around their neck, I will give you both $100. And he was like, there's no need to be sarcastic with that kind of thing. I was like, look,
I'm not being sarcastic.
I'm not being sarcastic. I'm like, if you want me to put it around my neck, I'll put it around my neck. I said, what I don't understand is why I had to put it around my neck while I'm just walking through a park and what the worst case scenario would be if I didn't have it around my neck. So, yeah.
What you've got there, Calvin, is very lucky, because what you've managed to do is spend 2 weeks in Australia without ever having come across this level of officiousness that is just a hallmark of my visits to Australia.
I didn't realise that, because to be honest, no one wears their lanyards around there. Because I'd say the main reason why we don't wear them here is because they're just itchy on your neck. It's so hot here, and you know, it's like, so everyone just has them in their pocket and you flash it. I mean, the worst thing about it as well, James, is now they've got this really good system here where you actually don't have to show it because it's chipped.
It picks it up as you come in.
It picks it up as you walk everywhere. So it'll just flash if somebody has walked through without a lanyard in their pocket. So you don't actually need it even on your being. But this security guard was adamant that while I was walking through the park, I needed to wear my lanyard.
Well, I'm almost glad, Calvin, that it's finally caught up with you, spending that long in Australia. Thank you very much for listening, as always. Please leave us a rating or review wherever you get your podcast. We really appreciate it. Get in touch on email, tennisunfiltered@gmail.com, with questions for George or Calvin or me. And most importantly, please do come back tomorrow.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.